From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation or on the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. RFID chips and soldiers, are you next? Catherine Albrecht joins us next hour as we talk about chipping America and Canada. Well, it happened not too long ago. An earthquake struck Britain, was felt across most of the parts of that country. Police report some minor damage to homes, no injuries. The 4.7 magnitude quake struck was centered around 125 miles north of London. Very unusual to get earthquakes there. They had another big one around 2002 of similar force. We tried to check in with our friend Lionel Fenthorpe about this. We were unable to get a hold of Lionel. We trust he and his family are okay. A problem with the electrical grid in Florida caused power outages to up to 3 million people and a nuclear power plant to automatically shut down. Authorities said there were no safety concerns at the plant, but they did not specify the outages' cause. While many areas were hit hard, the outages were short-lived, and only a few 100,000 people lacked electricity for the evening commute home. And while appearing live on an internet radio program on Monday, UFO researcher Dick Criswell took several live reports from UFO sightings. Now, some were from eastern Canada, others were from the area of the Turkey Point nuclear power generating plant near Homestead, Florida. This is the one that shut down. Dick is online with us now. Dick, this is another incredible story.
It's just another walk in the park for us. But yesterday was a banner day, and today was also a banner day for UFO reports there in Florida.
You know, I remember the Chernobyl disaster where a lot of witnesses said they saw some UFO-looking object hovering over that plant. Do you remember that, Dick?
Absolutely. Yes, I do.
Now, in this particular case, tell me a little bit more about the sightings.
You mean the one we had in Florida for yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. Before I went on air, On a radio show, I got a call from a gentleman in White Springs, Florida, that told me that he was seeing a big triangular shaped, looked like a black object to him with a ton of lights underneath of it. And he said it was going about, 200 to 300 feet off the ground. And that started things off from there, George. And then we received, just this morning, sightings from Homestead, Orlando, Daytona Beach, Miami, Jacksonville, Sanibel Island, Fort Walton Beach, Fort Myers, and Tallahassee. And the last time that we had that many reports, you recall the 2003 New York power outage?
Yes, sure do.
Yes, there was tons of reportings of UFOs in that vicinity that happened on the day of the event. There was also another event back in 1965 when the whole East Coast was shut down, and there were reports of UFOs over high tension lines and over electrical plants and so forth. So, you know, when you get that kind of reports, it kind of makes you wonder what really is happening there.
Especially when they don't come out with a definitive reason of why the outage.
Well, I think I was listening to Fox today, and they said that something has disrupted the power, but that's all they would say.
Uh-huh. Yeah, wonder what it might be. Hey, Dick, I understand also you're working on a national UFO research facility. How's that coming?
It's coming together. We're trying to get a 30,000 square foot building to house IPUS, and it's going well. But you know, we need more support.
People need more information about what you do. Where can they go?
They can go to our website at www.canyoustandthetruth.com, and if we got any more UFO reports, they can let us know up there. There's a way of emailing us at 911ufo.com, and they can put the report in and let us know what's going on in their specific area. And there's a number that I can be reached up there as well.
All right, go ahead.
It's 765-483-9089.
Okay, and let us know, Dick, if any more reports on this very strange story of the outage in Florida, and then all of a sudden we get these UFO reports before and after. Thank you so much, Dick. Cases of tuberculosis that defy existing drugs are being recorded globally at the highest rates ever seen, with parts of the former Soviet Union especially vulnerable. In a report based on data from 81 countries, the World Health Organization is estimating that nearly 500,000 people a year worldwide become infected with a form of TB resistant to two or more of the primary drugs used to treat it. In a moment, Dr. Gary Ridenour joins us. We're going to be talking about a number of infectious diseases that could plague all of us. A U.S. team has won a $50,000 competition to design a spacecraft to rendezvous with and track the path of an asteroid which may threaten Earth. The winning entry, led by SpaceWorks Engineering, will shadow asteroid Apophis for 300 days. The measurements it takes will be used to refine what is known about the orbit of this 900-foot-wide space rock in New York. More than $1 million of counterfeit Gucci, Prada, Fendi, Rolex, and Coach goods have been seized in an early morning Chinatown raid by the mayor's Office of Special Enforcement. The raid came after a two-month investigation by city officials as they're trying to crack down on trademark counterfeiting. Most Brits remember their very first car, according to a study, more readily than their very first kiss, according to a new survey. You might want to remember, if you remember the car or the kiss, getting a set of wheels ranked more highly for young people than their initial embrace, their first boyfriend or girlfriend, and their 18th birthday. More than 40% of those surveyed were so attached to their very first car that they could even recall its number, its license plate. Now, that's something I can't do. In a moment, Dr. Gary Ridenour joins us. We talk about infectious diseases that could affect all of us. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Gary Ridenour attended Hiram College and was at Woodstock and witnessed the Kent State shootings. He attended medical school in Guadalajara, Mexico, and was one of the main characters in that movie called Bad Medicine. That happened to have been written by a classmate. Throughout his career, he did some internships in Canada, and then he moved to St. Louis for his residency in internal medicine and set up a shop at various places. He worked in the emergency room at St. Louis City Hospital. I got to tell you, after being from St. Louis, that place saw murders and other crime almost all the time there. And then went on to some other interests, right now educating everyone on the threat of the avian flu. He's our guest this hour, Gary Ridenour. Hello, Gary. How are you?
I have the flu.
No way. Do you?
Yeah, and I got the flu shot, too, what? And the CDC just reported that 45% of the people in the United States with the flu right now, the vaccine had no effect on them.
Doesn't work. I never take the flu shot, Gary.
I'll never will again. I mean, I'll pay the $8 and have somebody kick me in the pants.
Yep, don't do that at all. Well, you know, this strain, whatever it is, seems to be going all over the place. Yeah, I got hit with a bug several weeks ago, and I got to tell you, I hadn't had a cold, I haven't had the flu in 15 years. This felt awful, and it kind of lingers. Just when you think it's gone, this cough comes back, and you just keep
fighting. Yeah, I was fine yesterday, and I mean, today, and then I'm shutting my office down tomorrow because I'm coughing again.
Oh, doesn't go away. What is it, actually?
Well, it's a common influenza A, but the problem is that the population of the Earth is getting bigger. Also, to match that, we have to produce more pigs and more chickens to feed those people, and they are the viral replicators that send it back to us.
Uh-huh.
So as we get bigger, 750 million people flew by airplanes last year. It's just going to get worse every year until we find someone to, you know, try to get a hold on it.
You know, Gary, I feel as if all these discussions about pandemics might be a little too much. I have not ruled out the fact, though, that sinister forces may want us all to get sick for whatever reason. I don't know. What's your take on some of that?
Well, the flu's been tracked in lots of countries, and the most disturbing thing is that in Guangdong province, which is where Hong Kong is also, about 3 years ago, they had a flu outbreak in one city that 400,000 people were down, and they were packing the hospitals, and then all of that just zip disappeared from the internet. Now, just recently, they have announced more outbreaks in that area, and they have stopped transporting poultry to Macau and to Hong Kong, because that's just down a very big waterway straight to Hong Kong. And unfortunately, Guangdong is very heavily populated and contributes 12.5% of the economy for China. And this is a bad thing happening right now. India has already killed 5 million chickens in the last week or two with no effect. It continues to spread.
Now, do you think we are headed for a pandemic regardless of how it starts or who starts it?
Yeah, it is inevitable, which is what the World Health Organization says. I got an email yesterday from Australian Broadcasting Corporation that some woman in Indonesia has written a book that we are developing this as a bioweapon to release on the poorer countries of the world to kill them out.
What do you think of that? Preposterous or possible?
Well, 2% possible, 98%. The Indonesian government is blowing smoke so that when they get hit first with the flu virus and get quarantined, they're going to say, we told you, the United States government did this to us.
We are seeing some very strange laws signed in this country. We're seeing relationships with our friends in Canada, but with troops, so it would allow troops from Canada and the U.S. to basically go into each other's country in the event of any civil unrest or disturbance or pandemic.
Yeah, well, Bush signed us over to the U.N. if we get really bad here.
And so they could come in. What would they do if we all start getting sick? What would happen?
Let's say that Washington, D.C., the first carrier brings it into the president. The president and vice president go down, and away it goes. Then we'd contact World Health Organization and the CDC, the U.N., and go, we need help. Well, the U.N. is in New York City, which is the worst place in the world to be if you have a pandemic, because you have no power, no police, and no fire. And it would take them months to round up U.N. troops, if they could, to bring them to the U.S. to try to control things, because at the same time, the rest of the world is melting.
Would they force people to get vaccinations?
They've talked about that, and the problem is that the bird flu's been in Asia for 11 years now, and the Asians, China has thrown everything against the flu in small amounts, allowing the virus to mutate against it. So the vaccine is 12 years down the road. So it's in the U.S. plan is maintain the government infrastructure. And the bottom line is, folks, you're on your own.
And I have heard that they're building camps and are building camps and do have camps where they can put people, quarantine people if need be.
I don't care what they build. They can't do it. Only 2 years ago, we found out we were still selling F-14 fighter jet parts to Iran.
Yeah.
You know, like, duh. And so to try to make a quarantine, all right, it happens in New York City, let's say. You're the governor of New York. You pick up the phone. You call the National Guard. They pick up the phone and go, hello, Afghanistan, could you send back the National Guard, please?
Yeah. Yeah, like they can just show up tomorrow. And are they expecting what? Rioting? People running throughout the streets? Looting?
Well, once the power structure goes down, and when I did the show in January with Art Bell, I got hundreds of emails from people that work with power companies and things that are trying to plan to try to house their employees so that they will stay there and keep the plants going. Unfortunately, when you talk to the employees, they go, I'm not going out there. I'm staying home with my family.
So yeah. Everything starts to collapse.
Yeah, the power grid will go down first, and then that means fire, power, I mean, fire department, police department go down. 4 days without any power in New York City, the floodways, the subways will flood, and it'll take them 2 years to put the fires out if they get the power back in a day or two.
I sometimes look at this situation, for example, like in Florida today, when its grid goes down, 3 to 4 million customers without power. I sometimes think, Gary, is this a test? Are they just trying to see how we handle ourselves, how we react? What do you think?
It could be. I was on a station about a week ago, and I said, you know, turn the power off in your house for 12 hours and see what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, can you cook? Can you survive? You know, what can you do? My wife and I got the flu, and I went out to drive the car, and I came back and went like, this is dangerous driving this car. I'm not with the program here. And my son came in and goes, what are you guys doing? And I said, we're watching television through our mouths, you know, just going, oh. And he goes, that's not funny. I went, this is the way it's going to go. And, you know, you talked about the increased earthquakes and disasters and stuff. Before the 1918 bird flu pandemic and before the plague in 1348, there's very good recording about natural disasters, about earthquakes and floods and things that moved populations and concentrated them and caused bad food supplies and that, which allowed, you know, the plague and the pandemic to take off.
Gary, the
story
I had right before you about a drug-resistant TB all at record levels globally,
yep.
That's a big problem, too.
Well, the Russian system has been very poor at watching TB in the prison system, and this happened about 3 or 4 years ago. You know, a lot of patients in jail that have HIV, which are not being treated, and forms of the tuberculosis that would not normally infect a human get into them and get cooking, and then they come out and spread elsewhere. And so it's just poor medical care and lack of money.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. Almost sounds like the apocalypse all over again, doesn't it?
Fourth horseman of the apocalypse was death, and he rode with death, famine, and disease, and was given a quarter of the planet. And this may be him.
What do you think people should do, Gary?
First thing is that, you know, get stocked up enough food and supplies for at least a week or so. The next thing is prepare yourself to be armed. You know, today, Saturday, when we were real sick, I said to my wife, and I'm like, God, I feel so bad. You know, if this was it, you know, I'd, you know, get a gun and go down to the neighbors and see if they got cough medicine. You know,
I mean, if it was that bad, you'd rob your neighbors for cough medicine?
I would say if it was the avian flu and, you know, I was that sick in that, I would consider it.
Oh, my God, Gary, coming from you, what else will happen then?
Well, that's what I'm just thinking about. But the problem is that when I got into this mode where I was so sick, I, you know, saw more of what's going to happen, which is we don't have food, so let's go down to the neighbors. Their lights are on. They got a generator. Let's go down there and take their food.
It's just like that Twilight Zone episode when they had that phony false alarm of a nuclear attack.
Exactly.
One guy had a fallout shelter.
People were trying to get into the fallout shelter, and you wouldn't let them in.
Same thing. Same thing.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Same scenario. 80% of our drugs come from other countries. They won't come. In my book, Pandemic, I have talk about pandemic parallels between this and 1918. 1918 in August, it snowed 18 inches in Buenos Aires. August of last year, it snowed 18 inches in Buenos Aires.
So how about that? Huh? A little similarity? And what does that all mean?
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's time to thin out the herd.
It may be. What's your website, Gary?
PandemicDirect.com. And I'd like to thank all the people that, you know, emailed me, and Michael Moore, thanks for sending me some email. And I'd like to thank the people that I have to apologize for some of the late deliveries on the books, because the guy that was handling the books, I fired him, which was me, and I got somebody else doing it now.
All right. Do you got enough strength for about 20 minutes of phone calls?
Oh, heck yeah. Let's
go. Okay, we're going to do that with Gary Ridenour as we talk about diseases all over the place. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. I'll be back in a moment. Well, next hour, we're going to talk with Catherine Albrecht. They want to put chips in all of us. We're going to find out why. That'll be next hour. We'll be back in a moment with Gary Ridenour and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Gary Ridenour and your phone calls as we talk about the pandemics out there. Gary, when you started getting involved with this years ago, was there one episode that got you into this end?
Well, it was the first thing was the outbreak in Vietnam, and I had some researchers at the University of Arizona. They thought they had a novel drug. They wanted to take over. We got clearance from the military and everything to go over, and got clearance from the bottom of the Vietnamese government. When it went up to the hardcore guys, then suddenly they dropped off the screen for a month and then came back and went like, thank you, no problem here. So in the meantime, it's now in 90 countries.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's go west of the Rockies. Mike, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Gary and George.
Welcome.
Hi. Very interesting. You know, I've been out of work for a few years, but I'm a former nurse. I used to work in a jail. Gary, I used to do TB screening, and I found the inmates would come in, a couple of quick questions, and we would test them, and they'd get released a week later, and they'd come in and get, you know, tested again. And my first question, is there a danger in repeated vaccinations? And another thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, another thing I'm noticing now, I was going to take a job in a convalescent hospital with the MRSA virus, which is, you know.
Yeah.
We're not even isolating these patients anymore. And if you notice, everybody seems to be sick and coughing around us. My third question, and I'll take it off the air. In the old days, TB people used to be sent off to the desert. Is there a danger in repeated vaccinations, and can we protect ourselves by maybe moving to the desert in a better environment?
Okay, well, the first one, if you get multiple TB screenings over a short period of time, let's say a year or two, you may come up with a false positive TB, okay? And then at that point, you have to get chest x-rays from there on. There are some countries that used to put out a drug that would, like the Philippines, that would protect you from TB. It didn't work, but it gave you a false positive TB test all the time. So that's a problem. The next one on MRSA. MRSA should be absolutely protected. I mean, that should be isolation situation. MRSA is getting to be 10 to 15% of the infections in hospitals today. A lot of it is very susceptible to SEPTRA, but because they named it, you know, we used to call it methicillin-resistant staphylococcus, and then they gave this name MRSA, which is supposed to make it really scary, so everyone now go like, oh, my Lord, they got MRSA. Well, that's 10% or 15% of the hospital infections today. The problem is with the infection rate in our country today, England this last year stopped doctors from going into the hospitals wearing sport coats and ties because they're contaminated.
Jeez.
Especially the ties.
Yep, yep.
And I was in the hospital last year for 4 days with the flu again, thank you. And in 4 days, nobody changed my mat, my you know, sheets. Nobody came in to help me do a bed bath or help me into the shower. You know, I just lay there, and nobody cleaned anything. When I was an orderly back in the 1960s, we changed the beds every day, and, you know, we bed bath people and stuff. And now, because of the dollar, we don't do that stuff anymore.
These staph infections nowadays, Gary, they're unbelievable. I had a friend just call me from Dallas today. She's got a grapefruit size staph infection under her eye, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's awful. The I got a friend that's a doctor and a surgeon in Reno, and he goes in, he takes his scrub shirt off, and he's pulls the scrub pants down and grabs the little booties on the bottom of the feet and pulls them off almost last, which are heavily contaminated, then gets into his regular street clothes and then goes out to dictate. And he realized that when he's going to dictate now, he's like Monk. He wipes off the dictaphone, the desk, and everything because he doesn't know how contaminated the doctor that came out of the operating room is. Because they're going to spread it on also.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Linda, you're up with us. Hello, Linda.
Hi. I was just wondering, with the lack of medications that will be available to us, what maybe homeopathic and natural supplements can we take to build up our immune systems? I take turmeric and ester C. Is that good enough, or what else would you suggest?
I would suggest a single malt scotch would be the best choice. If the problem is with young people 20 to 40, they have really good immune systems. And when the avian flu gets into your lungs, your immune system dissolves your lungs. And that's what kills you. So I'd kind of get away from trying to up your immune system. The biggest thing is that once the virus starts spreading through the country and gets into your town, the best thing you can do is hide for 8 to 10 days until it passes through.
What are some other countries doing fight this? I understand England is doing, temporary mortuaries, for crying out loud?
England's got temporary mortuaries set up where they put the bodies in, they'll burn the bodies. This is back to 1962 in case of an atomic attack. They've reactivated that. They will probably dispense people that are not going to make it with pistols. Hong Kong has set up big stadiums for field hospitals. We've had a training center down in Area 51 for 3 years now where they're teaching the military how to put on what's called a Kaplan suit, which has a self-contained air pack so that they can walk around in contaminated areas and try to, close off the area. The problem is going to be is that it'll hit so fast and so hard, the only thing you can do is get your family, stay indoors until it passes through, and then hopefully get out and, try to survive.
And you believe it's not if, it's when.
Yeah, that's what everybody's saying. It's not an if, it's now a when. Who said, the World Health Organization said, inevitable. The Center for Disease Control, which is very conservative, said, the greatest threat to mankind in history. And in my book, I show you that 75,000 years ago, the human race was almost wiped out. 1340, we had a heck of a hit. 1918, we lost 50 to 100,000 people. And, it's coming around again, but it's like you have a giant house with, let's say 130 rooms in it, and each room's a country. And we come up and we knock on the windows and we go, hey, hey, the building's on fire. And they open up the window and they go, we'll give you an appointment for next week, please. And thank you very much.
Why do I have this feeling, Gary, that if it happens, that it was done intentionally, that they wanted this to wipe out the population? Why do I feel this way?
I know. I've got the same feeling. There was a cartoon I saw in the 1950s where it was a big manhole cover being opened up by two generals, and they were coming out, and they looked around, and everything had been blown away by an atomic war. And the one said to the other one, he goes, it's a new game.
So true.
And you just, it starts to make you wonder, but the amount of mendacity that's going around grab Hillary Clinton or somebody and go, hey, tell me something about the bird flu. And she go, we have committees working on that right now, and we're going to sit down a subcommittee, and we're going to work on it real hard when I get elected. And John F. Kennedy once said that a camel was a horse designed by a committee.
Are you one of those who think you should walk around with those alcohol gels and rub your hands all the time and everything else?
Actually, I'll tell you, I agree. The we had an outbreak of Norwalk virus at our extended care facility, and they had 43 people down out of 100. I called over and told housekeeping to wash all the door handles down every shift, wash all the counters off and everything, and it went down. It stopped there. At my wife's facility, which is an extended assisted living, she got one, and I said, put a table out front and have everybody wash their hands coming in and going out, and wash all the door handles and everything, and they held it at one patient.
One
so,
patient.
It's just simple things. I've got the dealers here in the casinos on their brace washing their hands because they're handling dirty money.
That's a good point. First-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Chris in Tucson.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a question and a theory. I wonder if your guests might make a connection to this pandemic to chemtrails, if they might be dispensing it through the air. Because I drive coast to coast, long-haul trucker, and I see it all over the country. And I can only imagine the way so many thousand of pilots would be involved in it is that they're putting it in the fuel additive, and so they have no idea they're doing it. And if you talk to a pilot, they think you're misconstruing a chemtrail from a contrail, that it dissipates. But you can sit and watch how it starts as a stream, and then it dissipates, and eventually it's just a big fog bank in the sky. And I wondered if the globalists might be using the airlines as a deployment system.
Well, the thing with it is that if it goes through the engine and blows out the other end, it's sterile, okay? However, jet fuel, especially Navy JP-8 jet fuel, will grow bacteria. And we're currently looking at 7 cases of what's called Q fever in our town, and most of them are on the flight path. And the Air Force has talked about opening up their tanks and having these big glups of stuff fall out that are all bacteria.
Oh, wow.
So if you dump your fresh fuel, you could be dumping bacteria out of that.
Uh-huh. Okay,
but that's usually at lower levels.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. What do you think of these little masks people wear sometimes? I see people wearing them on planes now.
Yeah, NIOSH N95 is supposed to be the mask. But, I mean, even if you get a big piece of silk and wrap it up, and make it into a double or triple fold bandana, you're probably just as safe. But it's going to start to be that way on international flights. China and a number of provinces are already doing digital temperature checks on people to make sure they don't have fevers before they leave their country.
When you're on a plane, you are breathing this lousy recycled air, aren't you?
Yeah, and years ago, The airlines were real big on stopping smoking on the plane because then they didn't have to have as good of filters and they didn't have to recycle the air so fast. So they saved money. So now with no smoking, the air is not moving through the filters and it's not moving as fast as it used to.
Good point. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello there. Hello.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, take it away.
Hi, this is Mike with South Carolina. The question was concerning. I was in law enforcement several years, worked 2 prisons, 2 jails, and just a few years ago before I got out, we started seeing an increase in these sores that at first looked like brown recluse bites in the meth addicts, then later discovered they were highly infectious staph infections, but they wouldn't tell us what type. I was wondering if he'd heard about that increase and possibly if it was Mercer.
It can be. I saw it in St. Louis starting back in the 80s. We called them skin poppers that didn't have any veins anymore, so they were just popping the meth under the skin and getting infected. And we had some people who came in, we called them Popeye arms. Their forearms were so swollen and infected. Plus, the other thing is that shooting meth kills your immune system on top of it. So you can get any kind of infection when you start messing with that drug.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi. I'm Merlin Phoning from Chicago.
Yes, sir.
A few things. Number one, to a previous caller, she had asked what other things could be taken to help strengthen the immune system. One, there's some basic things. Keep yourself healthy, you know, eating properly, getting some exercise. Keep stress down. You know, these are some things that I try and do. I also take a liquid mix, besides regular vitamins, of the shiitake, I think that's how it's pronounced, and one other, maybe mitake or something, mushrooms, in a liquid form. And I take that every once in a while. I'll take that. That's kind of an immune booster. Secondly, I always carry around a small vial of the hand sanitizer and use that. And incidentally, in our senior citizen building, we have a pool room down there. And one of the tenants came up with a brilliant idea of bringing in some of that hand sanitizer. And so the fellas or whoever's going to play pool can put that on their hands and keep their hands sanitary, and thereby keeping the pool sticks and everything else, the chalk and all those kinds of things. You know, we're really helping to stifle the spread of bacteria, the TV knobs, you know, because the old folks will sit there and watch TV and turn the knobs and all that kind of thing. Those things are extremely important at the VA hospital here in Chicago. There are also those dispensers all over the place. And these info tapes or DVDs or whatever, you know, showing people how to keep themselves healthy and avoid the spread of germs. So these are some things that could be done. And on long-distance travel on aircraft, they have these small ionizers. You could wear it around your neck, you turn it on, his little battery powers it, and it draws in air, ionizes it, and going through an electric charge and destroys bacteria, anything and everything, but the air that comes out has kind of a metallic kind of smell, you know, because it's ionized and so on. But that's another way of kind of stifling your breathing in of bacteria and viruses and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think those are very good ideas. Where'd you work at, Michael Reese?
No. This is just going to the VA. You know, I noticed these changes. And...
Well, Michael Reese was one of the big VAs up there years ago.
Oh, okay. No, this is Westside VA. Now it's changed. They changed the name to the Jesse Brown VA. But most of us veterans, I'm a Vietnam vet. I had two tours of duty overseas.
Yeah, I agree with you. Good, you know, if you can keep it out of your hands and keep it out of your lungs, you got a good shot.
How'd you like St. Louis during your stay?
My last thing was I did critical care medicine, and then I ran the emergency room at St. Louis City Hospital for 18 months. Murder a day, a rape a day, 3 gunshots to the chest a day.
Yep.
Got a little tired of that. In fact, I was there during the heat wave. Was on TV. During that big heat wave.
When it's hot, it's hot. West of the Rockies, we'll squeeze in one more. Go ahead. Is that you, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, George.
Hi.
And I'm not sure what your speaker's name is, but
Gary.
I'm in San Diego, Gary. Okay. I'm in San Diego, and I was recently in the hospital here at Scripps, and I had the best medical care I've ever gotten, and they change the beds every day. I had a orthoscopic surgery in my stomach. They had to repair a bleeding ulcer, and I was practically dead. And I think you're trying to basically spread fear tactics yourself.
Let's let them react to that, because we've only got 30 seconds to go.
I'm not saying that. Do they change your bed every day and wash you every day and change your pillow and give you fresh clothes every day?
Probably not, Gary. They're probably not at all. Anyways, Gary, the clock's got us. And I want to thank you for being on this program. And let's sit back and see what happens.
Okay, pandemicdirect.com.
You got it. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate that. Now, when we come back, Catherine Albrecht is going to join us. We're going to talk about chips. Would you think about this for a moment? If they ordered you to get chipped, and they simply said, you know, for you to conduct commerce, to go to the bank, go to the supermarket, you got to just wave your hand where your chip has been embedded. Would you do it? Think about that. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.